We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. When he was running for president in 1960, John F. Kennedy asked a crowd of students at the University of Michigan if they would be willing to give part of their lives traveling around the world working for the Foreign Service. It was a remark that might have passed unnoticed. It certainly wasn't reported on by the media, but it did capture the imagination of the students that were listening. And that rather offhand remark would end up growing into something very big, an organization that turned 50 this year. This morning, we'll be talking about the Peace Corps and how it got started. And our guest is Stanley Meisler. He's written a book that's just recently been published about the history of the Corps. The title is When the World Calls, The Inside Story of the Peace Corps in Its First 50 Years. The Beacon Press is the publisher. Our guest, Stanley Meisler, is a former journalist. He was a foreign and diplomatic correspondent for the LA Times for 30 years. He was also served as the deputy director of the Peace Corps' Office of Evaluation and Research in the mid-60s. He's written for a number of publications, Foreign Affairs, Foreign Policy, The Atlantic, The Nation, and Smithsonian, and is joining us this morning by phone. As we talk, questions and comments are certainly welcome. We hope people can be brief so that we can get as many callers in as possible, but certainly questions and comments are welcome, and maybe someone listening out there this morning was in the Peace Corps and would want to tell us about what that experience meant to them. That would be great. And, of course, any and all questions are welcome, too. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. You also may send an email to will, W-I-L-L, hyphen, talk, at illinois.edu. And Mr. Meisler, hello.
Hello.
Thanks very much for talking with us.
Oh, very pleased to be here.
You know, I do think that it's interesting that apparently while people had, in the years before Mr. Kennedy came along, people had talked about something kind of like the Peace Corps, that even when he sort of made this remark talking to these students, he didn't seem to have any firm idea in his head of this, and certainly did not use the words Peace Corps. When he made that remark in 1960, just to what extent had he even thought about something like this?
Well, I think, you know, it was an idea that had been percolating around. You know, Senator Humphrey had put in a bill, and Congressman Royce had put in a bill about to have some kind of volunteer program. You're right, Kennedy himself really didn't have much idea. And, in fact, his remarks to the University of Michigan students are very much a Cold War kind of challenge, saying, well, the Russians are putting young people around the world. Are you willing to do the same, go out and spend some time in the developing world? So I don't think he had a very clear idea, but once the students responded to him, and they responded in great numbers, and then the word spread to other universities, and letters and petitions started reaching the campaign headquarters, and this was in the last 10 days of the campaign, he seized on the idea and had this campaign speech. Or about 2-3 days before the election, he spoke at the San Francisco Cal Poly, and he sat down and he called it a Peace Corps. Although even there, I don't think his idea was very sharp, because his speech is mostly devoted to attacking the U.S. Foreign Service. You know that. He felt that the diplomats were not representing the United States well, and he pointed out that in Athens, no American diplomat could speak Greek, and in New Delhi, no American diplomat could speak Hindi or any other Indian language. And so he set down this Peace Corps, which the young people who would be able to speak the language and would be better representatives of the United States. And that did hit a chord. But I think once the campaign was over, he still didn't have too clear an idea of what he wanted. And he probably, I think he wanted a very small tentative program, maybe a few hundred volunteers to go overseas. He didn't want them to cause too much trouble for himself. But the idea grew from there. It sort of left Kennedy, and his brother-in-law, Sergeant Shriver, took over. And that's a whole different story.
Yeah. Well, it certainly does seem to be a remarkable example of a politician saying something, but then that really resonating with people getting excited about it. And this was a truly kind of a grassroots effort where these students and then other students just got very excited about the idea. And then as a result of the excitement that they generated, then the politician had to actually act on that thing that he hadn't really been thinking about or hadn't been thinking about it in that way.
Right. It also was a period, you know, of I don't think people realized it then because it was the beginning of the 60s. But the 60s was a period where young people wanted to do things.
Mm-hmm.
It evolved later where they went and fought for civil rights in the South, and they demonstrated against Vietnam later, and so on. And I think the Peace Corps was part of this, because the response to him was, you know, when you think back on it, very, very surprising and kind of amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's something that's also maybe we ought to make the point of underscoring here, because in what I have read, some of the reaction to your book and just what people have written about the fact that this important milestone had been reached back in March, it was the 50th anniversary of President Kennedy signing the order that created the Peace Corps. I think we should indeed make the point for people who are listening that the Peace Corps still exists, and that might actually surprise some people.
Right. I think these days, it doesn't get the kind of publicity that it did in the early days. You know, it was really a national phenomenon once it began. And there were front page stories every day, and Shriver, the director of the Peace Corps, he was on the front cover of Time magazine, and the first volunteers were selected. Got their names in the paper like they had won Guggenheim fellowships and so on. So it was a really big, big phenomenon. I mean, the New Yorker devoted 5 cartoons to it the first year. Now, you know, there was a headline on the front page of the New York Times, I guess about a month ago, about the problem of rapes in the Peace Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably the first front page publicity the Peace Corps had gotten in the New York Times in about 15 years.
Yeah, and unfortunately,
it's a whole different period.
Yeah, unfortunately, not the kind of publicity that you would really like to have.
No, it was not good publicity for the Peace Corps.
Let's come back to that. We'll come back to this issue
later.
Of security of Peace Corps volunteers in a moment. But I just I'm curious about. We told the story about how President Kennedy, when he was campaigning, made this sort of general, sort of tossed out this idea, well, who would be willing to do this kind of work, and that generated a lot of excitement among college students. And as a result, then he started talking about this a little bit more concretely, and then shortly before the election, he gave the speech where he actually talked, you actually used the words Peace Corps.
Right.
Is there some individual who gets the credit for coining the name for the organization?
Not really. I think one of the early bills, either Royce or Humphrey's bill, actually talked about a volunteer Peace Corps. But the I don't think anyone has ever, that I've seen, you know, has gotten real credit for this.
Our guest in this hour is Stanley Meisler. He is a former foreign and diplomatic correspondent for the L.A. Times. He also, back in the mid-1960s, worked in the administration of the Peace Corps. He was deputy director of the Corps' Office of Evaluation and Research, and he has authored a recent book that's titled When the World Calls, The Inside Story of the Peace Corps in Its First 50 Years. That milestone was reached back in March. It was in March of 1961 that President John Kennedy signed the order authorizing the creation of the Peace Corps. This book is out now. It's published by the Beacon Press, and questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, we explained a little bit how the idea came about, and then that even at the time that President Kennedy signed the order creating the Peace Corps, he had in mind something that was much smaller in scale than it became. And I think one has to acknowledge that the Peace Corps, what the Peace Corps became, what the Peace Corps is, had a lot to do with one man, and that's Sergeant Shriver, the man that President Kennedy, he handed the job of creating this thing off to Sergeant Shriver. He said, "Here, you make this thing happen." And it turned out that Sergeant Shriver had a much larger vision in mind than did John Kennedy.
Well, you know, Shriver was a kind of natural public relations man and a great idealist. In fact, his job for the Kennedy family was sort of mostly public relations, because he was in Chicago where the Kennedys owned the building called the Merchandise Mart, and his job was to go out and interest companies to go in and sign up and become part of the Merchandise Mart. And so he was a natural salesman. And so when Kennedy handed him the project and then gave him an academic paper that had been prepared, which suggested a very small Peace Corps that would not get the United States into trouble, it just didn't fit in with Shriver's mood. He's very uncomfortable with that idea, and he's looking around for better ideas. And a paper came to him, which was written by two people who worked for the predecessor to the Agency for International Development, the Foreign Aid Program of the United States. And their paper, which is called The Towering Task, they put down a theory that you must have a Peace Corps that is large enough to make an impact. Otherwise, the whole idea will sort of dissipate. And also, they felt that you must you must move quickly. You have all these students, most of the people applying and sending letters were recent college graduates, and if you didn't take advantage of their their excitement now, then you might lose it. And so the paper emphasized speed and numbers. Now, when you examine the paper today, it was kind of ridiculous, because they proposed things like, I think it was 50,000 volunteers to go to the Philippines, and 5,000 in Mexico, and 20,000 to India. And these are numbers that would have destroyed the Peace Corps if anybody ever tried, to do that kind of thing. But the idea that it should be bigger than what Kennedy felt was needed, that struck a chord with Shriver. Mm. And from there he got, that sort of galvanized Shriver into action, and he went straight. He got Kennedy to sign the executive order in about 3-4 days, and then he put together this Peace Corps. In within 6 months, he had the first volunteers overseas. So it was an incredible performance by Shriver. He had to go overseas to talk to leaders of the developing world to persuade them that they should accept volunteers, and then he had to go through the volunteers and select those that he felt, or go through the applicants, select volunteers. They had to be trained. People had to go out to these countries to make sure there were places where the volunteers could live and so on. And this was all done in 6 months, with a number of errors, shall we say. Didn't always work exactly the way they wanted, but it was a magnificent achievement, and it really was all done by Shriver.
Yeah, that's it. It really is. You can't understate the difficulty of the task, the enormity of the task of inventing this organization from the ground up. And when you think that they managed to do this in this period between March 1st, when the president signed the official order, and it was in August that the first volunteers went. They went to Ghana in Africa. That just seems remarkable that they could actually manage to get this thing off the ground that fast.
In fact, the volunteers set foot in Africa before Congress actually authorized the Peace Corps. It had been set up by executive order, but it still needed to be authorized by the United States Congress. It would never get funding. And that also was part of Shriver's job, to go talk to as many congressmen as possible and persuade them though what a wonderful idea this was. It's interesting. He had the volunteers overseas before Congress even approved it.
We have a caller to talk with. Let's do that. Someone who is calling in on a cell phone. They're in Paxton, and they're on line 4. We'll get right there and say hello. Hello, caller. Go ahead.
Yeah, David. Hi. Thank you. I'm calling on a cell phone out in the hinterland, so I don't know how good the signal is, but I'll make it brief. I'm in my mid-50s, so this thing got kicked off when I was just a small boy, but I was wondering if your guest could speak to two things. Number one, as far as the students being placed in various countries, what was the harm's effect of this? In other words, did anybody lose their life in this process, and was there any thought given to that? And then I was just wondering, as far as the Peace Corps goes, was there any sort of ranking, if you will, not necessarily a military, but I mean, did these people have titles, and how did that work? And I'll go ahead and listen off air. Thanks.
Okay. Well, we did talk a little bit earlier about the issue of security of the volunteers, which was obviously a big concern for the organization. But it is true that over the years that people, that is volunteers in country, have been victims of crime. Some people have actually been murdered. There have been some sexual assaults. So that always was and perhaps still is an issue.
That was at the early feeling of the Peace Corps was that the problems of violence and also health problems and the incidence of deaths, because there were a number of accidental deaths, in traffic accidents, things like that. Sorry. But the health experts felt at the time that the Peace Corps was, the problems were no worse than they would be if the volunteers were in the U.S. And real statistics were not compiled about this until year 1990, when the Peace Corps began issuing yearly accounts and safety problems. But the second thing that the caller called about, there really wasn't a rankings. There were certain people who were staff who were hired by the Peace Corps to help the volunteers. I suppose they were the higher number, higher rank. And then beyond that, there were volunteers. A few volunteers in the early years were called volunteer leaders. They were supposed to be helping to supervise some of the programs. But that sort of fell out. Basically, you had staff people who worked for pay, and the volunteers who did the work and received no more than a living allowance.
I think that it was the original idea. It was President Kennedy's original idea that the Peace Corps should be part of the Foreign Service, and I think that here is a case where Sergeant Shriver was very important, that it was he, I believe it was he, who thought it was important that the Peace Corps should be independent and not part of the State Department. And how did that come about?
Well, the Kennedy idea was really to be part of the Foreign Aid Program, which is part of the State Department today. And that the volunteers would work under the supervision of foreign aid officials. But the Foreign Aid Program had a kind of bad reputation in those days. There was a feeling there was a lot of waste in the program, and people were suspicious of it, and Shriver didn't want to have any of that. And he also felt that what the volunteers were doing was something very special, and it should not get involved in U.S. foreign policy. Foreign aid was considered part of U.S. foreign policy. You ended up giving the Friends of the United States more money than anybody else, and giving money to countries that you felt would be helpful to the United States. And Shriver's idea was the Peace Corps would just go where the need was, and not depend on foreign policy. And so they had this this conflict, because the White House really was set on this, that we can't have volunteers just running around. They have to be part of foreign aid and supervised by foreign aid officials. And in fact, the White House had a meeting while Shriver was overseas, made the decision the Peace Corps will be part of the Foreign Aid Program. And Shriver got very upset, and he called on Lyndon Johnson, who was the vice president then. And Johnson had been one of the early people who felt if the Peace Corps is going to be any good, it better be independent of U.S. diplomats and U.S. foreign aid officials. And so Johnson went to talk to Kennedy and sort of harangue Kennedy and insist that it had to be independent. And so Kennedy finally gave in to both his vice president and his brother-in-law, and agreed, well, we'll make it independent. The irony is, when Johnson became president of the United States, he treated the Peace Corps like it was his own little foreign policy machine. Mm-hmm. That it would do whatever he felt ought to be done for the benefit of U.S. foreign policy. But at the beginning, he was great help in making it independent.
All right, let's talk with another caller. This is someone here in Champaign County, where we are, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I'll try and be brief. It's easy to be misunderstood, as I was when I was talking about Agency for International Development in Indonesia some weeks ago. But I think the context of the time is important, and you're sort of talking around it right now, which is the reputation of the AID, the Foreign Service arm, was that they were completely completely adjuncts of the CIA, which was quite active during that time. I was looking around for Rethinking Camelot by Chomsky. I can't find it, but the whole thing is up on the web. You can find and look through it if one wants to know a different spin on the times. I attended a Committee of Returned Volunteers anti-Vietnam War conference. It was one of the better anti-war conferences. It was quite well organized. I don't know how much tradition, how wide world nationwide that conference was, but these were people that came back from their experience in the Third World and were quite resolute about changing the U.S. role in the world and starting, I guess, with Vietnam. So I don't know what kind of reaction you'll have. You're on Beacon Press, which is admirable press. I've published quite a few sort of glasnost kind of documents in its time. And how would you respond to that, my bringing up that whole part of the dimension of the Kennedy legacy? I mean, Kennedy was known for COINTELPRO and the beginnings of it, and counterinsurgency warfare in the Third World by many people, not so many here in the U.S.
Well, there's no doubt that the many of the volunteers who came back in the 60s began to oppose the war in Vietnam and were very vocal about it, and felt that some of them, there was an extreme group that felt the Peace Corps itself was sort of put there to be as they put it, the smile on the face of the tiger. In other words, while it was there just to deceive people into thinking that the U.S. had good intentions, but the real intentions of the U.S. could be shown in what they were doing in Vietnam. But even those who did not feel that, many were opposed to the war in Vietnam. In fact, there was a lot of problems for the Peace Corps, because there'd be volunteers overseas while on duty who would organize demonstrations against the war in Vietnam, write letters to the newspapers against the war in Vietnam. And that caused a lot of problems with the Peace Corps and how to deal with this. At first, they tried to silence the volunteers. They dismissed one volunteer in a Latin American country, and he filed suit in federal court, and the Peace Corps lost. The federal judge ruled that the volunteer was not an employee of the U.S. government. He was an American citizen who had the right to express his views on any international subject, and the Peace Corps could not dismiss him for opposing the war in Vietnam. So you had this ferment going on in the late 60s and early 70s of a very strong anti Vietnam, the war, strong sentiment against the war in Vietnam. I think that hurt the Peace Corps, because it hurt recruitment. A number of people who opposed the war in Vietnam who felt that any attachment to the U.S. government was bad. And therefore, they felt joining the Peace Corps was bad, and so the recruitment started to be more difficult. Numbers of applicants dropped. So the whole Vietnam period, I think, was a difficult one for the Peace Corps. Hmm. But there's no doubt that a lot of volunteers opposed the war.
We're talking this hour of Focus about a bit about the history of the Peace Corps, how it got started. Our guest is a former journalist, Stanley Meisler. We're talking about his book, When the World Calls, and we'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois, providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston-Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. There are no substitutes for donated blood. Blood donation takes 45 minutes and saves lives. Information at 367-2202 or on the web at bloodservices.org.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here for 10 hours each week with 10 different topics. Let me mention that in hour number two today, Celeste Quinn will be hosting, and her guest will be Peter Kimball from the Center for Teaching Excellence at the U of I. This is our monthly program on computers. So if you're having a problem with your computer, we can get some help. You're thinking about buying a new one, maybe you're looking for some advice. That'll be today. In the second hour. Tomorrow in the 10 o'clock hour, the guest is Susan Casey. She's an award-winning journalist. She is now editor-in-chief of O, the Oprah magazine, and is the author of the book titled The Wave, which now has just recently come out in paper, and it's about some of her experiences getting to know some of the world's most high-level, advanced competitive surfers. That's tomorrow. And then also tomorrow in the 11 o'clock hour, our monthly show on dog care and dog behavior with Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel, and Celeste Quinn will be the host. If you'd like to check up on what we'll be doing here next week and as far into the future as we have shows, you can go to our website and look at the Focus section. So the website is will.illinois.edu. That's W-I-L-L.illinois.edu. We also have a web archive there, and you can listen to past programs as well. In this part of Focus, our guest is Stanley Meisler. He's former foreign and diplomatic correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He also was the deputy director of the Peace Corps' Office of Evaluation and Research in the mid-1960s, and he is the author of the book When the World Calls, The Inside Story of the Peace Corps and Its First 50 Years. It is published by the Beacon Press. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and as well, if you would like to send us an email, you can do that too, and that is WILL-talk@illinois.edu. And I think we have a caller that called a little earlier. Maybe he wanted to do a follow-up here on our line four in Paxton. Hello.
Yeah, David, hi, thanks. Sorry, sure. Don't mean to manipulate the conversation here. And I have a question. I think it might be not too far afield. Again, if you guys covered it, go ahead and ignore it. But it seems to me that I would call a domestic counterpart to the Peace Corps, I want to say it was called VISTA, and I think it concentrated on the poorer sections of the United States. And I was wondering if your guest could speak to how did VISTA come about, when it came about, and I don't think it's any longer in operation, but perhaps it is. And if he has any comments on that, I'll go ahead and listen. Thanks.
Well, okay. I think actually we were talking earlier about Sergeant Shriver. I think also he was very much involved in starting VISTA as well.
Yeah, because Johnson asked Shriver to run the War on Poverty program, and VISTA, the Domestic Peace Corps, was a huge part of that program. And I think it exists today, but I'm not sure it's called VISTA, but I could be wrong.
All right. Well, again, other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, I guess now I'm consulting here Wikipedia for what it's worth, and it says here that during the Clinton administration that VISTA was made part of AmeriCorps. In that sense, it does still exist, but it's called something else. Whether it's still called VISTA and people who work in it are called VISTA members, I kind of think that they are. So, yes, indeed, the answer to the question is yes, it does still exist. We talked a little bit about the fact that Sergeant Shriver felt it was important for the Peace Corps to be independent. We also talked about that various presidents they've had their own agendas, and they were interested in having the Peace Corps serve those agendas. I do want to talk about, though, the one president who probably thought the least of the Peace Corps and made the greatest efforts to actually put it out of business, and that would have been Richard Nixon. He succeeded in scaling back the Peace Corps, but in fact, the Peace Corps survived Richard Nixon.
Well, it survived, but I think it was a very difficult period. Because the Nixon White House sort of had a
a secret campaign to do whatever it could to diminish the Peace Corps and hopefully to obliterate it. And they did this even though it had still had huge popularity among both Republicans and Democrats. But Nixon didn't like it. I think he probably didn't like it because it seemed to be such a potent weapon for Kennedy during the campaign against Nixon. And so they operated this way and tried whatever they could to decrease the funding for the Peace Corps. And then I think they really hurt the Peace Corps when they sort of buried the Peace Corps as part of another agency. They called the other agency, was called Action, and it included VISTA, and it included the Peace Corps, and included various other volunteer programs. And so the Peace Corps, in a sense, no longer existed. It was the international division of Action, and that lasted through the rest of the Nixon Ford administration. It went through the Jimmy Carter administration like that, and it didn't escape, so to speak, come back to being the Peace Corps by itself until the Reagan administration.
I wanted to have you talk about an early controversy involving the Peace Corps that happened, and I think it was actually not long after the Peace Corps came into being, and it was touched off by a young woman who was a volunteer in Nigeria, and she was pretty unhappy with conditions there, or maybe the thing was that she hadn't really been very well prepared, didn't know what it was going to be like, and so she writes about just how bad things were. She wrote it on a postcard to send back to someone she knew in the United States, and the postcard ended up being intercepted, and it became something of an incident involving the U.S., Nigeria, and the Corps. One might have said it wasn't probably very politic on her part to do this in a way that could be anybody could read if it came into their hands. But it also goes to the question of how well the Peace Corps managed to prepare people for the experience they would have when they arrived in the country where they would be working.
I think it was, the postcard itself, that had been written in a letter under an envelope, and where no one would notice, it would not have upset people who read it later. The problem is that the city she was talking about, they were training in Ibadan. Which is in those days was Africa's largest indigenous city. And by that I meant it's not a city that the colonial powers had created, like most of the cities in Africa, like Nairobi in Kenya, were cities that the colonial government, the British or the French, set up. But Ibadan was a huge African city, and it was very, very poor. The sewers were open in the streets. She was right that some people went to the bathroom in the streets and so on. But it was kind of silly of her to put it on a postcard and send it off. And then the students at the University of Ibadan, the Nigerian students, sort of went wild with this and began demonstrating and demanding the Peace Corps leave and so on. And they eventually calmed down a bit. But she was immediately removed came back. I think Shriver was hopeful that nobody would notice this incident, But in fact, it was on the front page of every newspaper in the United States. It was a big, big story. It was the first Peace Corps great embarrassment. It was later, Warren Wiggins, who was deputy director of the Peace Corps, said that, it was a wonderful experience for the Peace Corps, that its first major problem, the first problem that hit the front pages of the United States was not the story of violence or murder, but it was the story of a girl writing a postcard that embarrassed everybody. It's kind of a good inoculation, so to speak, and people no longer were looking for stories that might embarrass the Peace Corps. It was a very unfortunate incident. It's interesting. I was at the University of Baden about 6 months later as a Ford Foundation fellow traveling through Africa. I spent 3 months at the university, and I talked to a lot of the students. And by this time, they were very embarrassed at how excited they had gotten over the postcard, and they thought that they had overreacted.
Well, one of the changes that happened, and I'm not sure exactly at what point this happened, but early on, the Peace Corps contracted with some American universities to do the training, the language training, and the preparation that the people would need who were going to go. And now later, the Peace Corps itself took over that job. Were there serious questions about whether or not whoever was supposed to be doing the training for the Peace Corps volunteers was really doing a good enough job?
Well, I think it was a very difficult assignment for American universities. First of all, it was hard for them to find personnel who knew the developing world. To give you an example, I had spent 3 months in Senegal as part of my that fellowship I was talking about as a Ford Foundation fellow in Africa, and I got a call from the university. This is before I went to work for the Peace Corps, asking for me to take over the training program of a group of volunteers going to Senegal, and I said, "Well, you know, I've only spent 3 months in the country. I don't know enough about it to lead a training program there and so on." And so I did not accept the offer. And then a few years later, when I went to work for the Peace Corps, I met the volunteers in Senegal who would have been in my training program if I had accepted. And I told them the story. And they all laughed at me. They said, "Well, your 3 months in Senegal would have been 3 months longer than anybody on our training staff at the university." Nobody who trained them knew anything about Senegal. And so you had a lot of those examples. You also had the difficulty of a university preparing students for specific jobs. For example, a lot of the jobs were teaching jobs where college graduates, VA, generalists, obviously who did not have education backgrounds, had to be trained in 10, 11 weeks to go overseas and teach in an African or school. And the you send volunteers to, say, Teachers College at Columbia University. Well, Teachers College wasn't really prepared to do that kind of a 2-3 year program in 11 weeks. And they would feed the volunteer with a lot of courses about philosophy of education and the history of education, and they would not spend enough time trying to get the volunteer practice teacher training. And this is a practice, and the volunteers really needed practice teaching more than they needed the philosophy of education and the history of education. So the training was very difficult at the university. Some managed to do a fairly good job, but I would say most did not. And the Peace Corps began to realize that the volunteers who were returning, the former volunteers, knew far more about preparing a volunteer for the job than anybody else. And so the training gradually evolved to where the Peace Corps did it itself, and usually in the country where the volunteer was going to work, and the staff were mainly former volunteers. So it worked much better that way.
Yeah. Let me just mention for people who are listening, we have about 5-6 minutes left. Our guest is Stanley Meisler. We're talking about the history of the Peace Corps, something that he writes about in his recent book, When the World Calls, published by the Beacon Press. And questions are welcome. If you want to call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. There are all sorts of things we could talk about, and there are a lot of interesting stories in here. I do want to raise one large question that, in fact, you raise in the afterword to the book, and which you titled "Does the Peace Corps Do Any Good?" And I'm sure that that's you can address that on some variety of levels, depending on who's good you're thinking about. I think though that that's maybe particularly if you're talking about the benefits to the host country, maybe that's not such an easy question to answer.
Well, it's a very difficult one, and when we worked for the Peace Corps, we used to discuss it, you know, wonder about it. And I, writing the book, of course, thought a great deal about it. The problem is that it's very difficult to measure. You can get various statistics that will show you certain amount of achievement. For example, there are volunteers now in fish programs, fish pond programs, and you can at the end of the year, weigh the amount of fish that were produced, or the amount of money that a village obtained for selling the fish, or you can have there are honey programs, and you can. You measure the amount, the same thing, the amount produced and or the sales price and so forth. Or you can, in teacher programs, have the number of students that volunteers have taught. So, but I think there's much more than that, because the volunteers also have a great influence. For example, in education, they try and teach their students not to memorize everything, to stop this rote learning, to stop thinking for themselves, and this is in some countries can be subversive. If it's an authoritarian government and you're teaching volunteers students to think for themselves, you may be causing problems for their government. But the whole question of how much you influence, we have a case in Peru of students meeting a 12-year-old poor Peruvian student, working with them for a number of years, and helping him when he got a scholarship to the United States, and he ended up becoming president of Peru, Alejandro Toledo, who kept calling himself the Peace Corps president. So how do you measure all these things, which I think are probably more important than the
the tonnage of fish and the tonnage of honey that are produced. But I'm satisfied in my own mind that they do have this kind of difficult-to-measure impact.
Yeah. Well, we're down here, and you know, we have about a minute, but I guess just very quickly, I think it's one also has to acknowledge that when you ask this question, you know, who benefited, that for the people who went as volunteers, it was a life-changing experience, and that a lot of these people went on to some kind of public service career here in the United States. So you might actually make the argument that the United States benefited as much, maybe more than the host countries.
Oh, the U.S. benefit is easy to see. I mean, we've had about a dozen members of Congress, two senators, about 20 U.S. ambassadors, all been Peace Corps volunteers, and then you know, have you many journalists and mayors and governors and so on. And also the mere fact of having 200,000 Americans who have experience in the part of the world that most other Americans can't find on a map is, I think, a magnificent or very important asset to the United States. So I think it's a there's no doubt it's benefited the United States.
Yeah. Well, there is the point where we'll have to stop. I want to mention one more time our guest, Stanley Meisler, was the deputy director of the Peace Corps' Office of Evaluation and Research in the mid-60s. He also spent 30 years as a foreign and diplomatic correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He is the author of the recently published book, When the World Calls, The Inside Story of the Peace Corps and Its First 50 Years. Beacon Press is the publisher. Mr. Meisler, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.